You are tuned in to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is PMH Atwater. PMH is one of the original researchers in the field of near-death studies, having begun her work in 1978. She has written 10 books on her findings and is now working on the 11th. Her 10th book is titled Near-Death Experiences, The Rest of the Story, which expands theories about brain and spirit shift, straight talk about transformations of consciousness and the future of the human race. Her work spans over 3 decades of scientific research with thousands of adults and children and another decade of consciousness research. This is the first part of a 2-part show which continues next Saturday and is called The Great Shifting 2012 and Beyond. I highly recommend that all the listeners go to her website at www.cinemind.com/Atwater and subscribe to her newsletter. It's chock full of information, and find out what the latest news is on consciousness research and on her new book. And we'll mention that again before the end of the show. So, without further ado, let's welcome her back to the show now. Hi, PMH. How are you?
Well, hi. It's wonderful to be there.
Oh, great. Well, you know, this seems to be an auspicious evening, being the autumnal equinox, right?
Well, yeah. Well, actually, the equinox is tomorrow morning.
Is it tomorrow morning?
So, yeah. We're just in advance of the equinox. Yeah.
Well, I know that you have a lot to share, so I'm going to just open this up for you to begin with what's going on, you know, with all the chaos in the world. What is really happening with the shifting, with the 2012 shift? We're getting to be so close now. You know, we're, what, about 3 months from that away, and I know that people are probably starting to get a little antsy, to say the least. What is going on from your perspective and from your many decades of research on in the human collective?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to be fair with the audience and sort of come clean.
Okay.
And that is that you and I are conducting an experiment with this show and the next show.
Okay.
And the next show is September the 29th.
So correct.
So this is the 22nd and then the 29th. And what we're doing is that we are experimenting. We are sort of exploring information that I gave, that I have given on several workshops, and all of this information is held and written on huge charts, and I mean huge charts. And these charts are now laid out across my kitchen countertops. with chair tops to sort of hold them in place so that I can see them as we talk.
Oh,
because
wonderful.
I've never done a show based on charts before.
Oh, my gosh. Well,
you know,
that'd
I mean,
be...
these are huge, massive things. And,
yeah.
and we thought, well, you know, let's just try this.
Yeah.
Because the information is there.
Right.
And let's just sort of skip through it.
Yes.
And see how helpful this might be. If nothing else, it's going to be very interesting.
I think that's such a wonderful way to begin. And all we need is a picture of your kitchen.
yeah, really, with this huge, massive chart spread across my
yes,
my
I think
countertop.
I have it now. I think I've got it, the
well,
picture.
It's so big. You know, that you know, the countertops make kind of like a little L shape, but this chart is so big that it covers everything and everything that's there and not there. So that's why I have a chair here to prop it up.
Wonderful. Well,
so I'm going to be rolling pages on this massive chart from time to time.
Great.
So
that's good.
As we sort of plunge into this, the whole idea of the Great Shifting, and that's what it's called, it's not just the end of the Mayan calendar. What we're looking at here is what the calendar is based on, and even that larger understanding that we in modern times call the Great Shifting, where everything turns around and everything shifts.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to really sort of lay good groundwork for what is meant by the Great Shifting, I thought it would be kind of helpful to take a look at what's happening in our universe right now, not just here on planet Earth,
mm-hmm.
but you know, sort of lay down a concept of, you know, this larger picture.
Yes.
And in doing so, I think it would be very helpful for the audience to realize that we live in a bubble universe with a black hole at its center.
Mm-hmm.
And our scientists estimate that the mass of that black hole is equivalent to 2 million suns.
Mm.
So think of our sun.
Mm-hmm.
And think of 2 million suns just like our sun. Get them all together, and you would have the mass and power of the black hole at the center of our universe.
Mm.
So, you know, that sort of gives a person some idea that we here on planet Earth are really kind of small. Because when we're talking about the universe we're living in, that's something that's so big.
Mm-hmm.
And 95% of everything that exists is dark matter. It cannot be seen. So we can only see 5% of what exists in our incredibly beautiful, wonderful, just massive universe. We can only see 5% of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of the way our faculties are set up. You know, most of the electromagnetic spectrum, for instance, most of that is either infra or ultra to our faculties of perception. So, you know, just as a brief aside, when we're going through various kinds of transformations of consciousness, or we have these mountaintop experiences, these spiritual experiences, Kundalini breakthrough, shamanic vision quest, near-death experiences, and on and on and on, we come back able to see more of that spectrum.
Mm.
So it was all there before. It was always all there before.
Mm-hmm.
But we could never see it because of our limitations in perception. Well, those limitations in perception are expanded after these incredible experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden now we come back and we're seeing things we never saw before, and we talk about them to other people around us, and they look at us like we're crazy.
Right.
Or we're some kind of new thought or new age kook.
Right.
And all we are is just being very honest and straight.
Right.
You know, this stuff is real. We see it. We didn't see it before because we weren't able to.
Now
we are able to. So
yeah.
I just want to make that point about what we can see and what we can't see.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We really cannot see, respond to, hear, or feel, or taste most of what is around us as we sit or as we are listening to this show right now.
Mm-hmm.
We can only respond to and recognize 5% of what's there.
Mm-hmm.
All the rest of it's there, didn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We just can't perceive it.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of the idea of all these radio shows right now, ours and everybody else's, and the frequencies of those shows out there, you know. and it depends on where you turn your dial.
Right.
What you can pick up. They're all there, but
yeah.
you can only pick up those you're tuned to.
Right.
So it's that same fact And I just want everybody to really focus on that and realize that everything is all here, but it depends on us what we tune into, and therefore what we see.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean we see all that's there.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also very helpful to realize that in our universe right now, all of the galaxies are speeding up. It's not just the Milky Way galaxy that is.
Mm-hmm.
All of the galaxies are.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
are speeding up, heating up, and streaking across the universe like frisbees.
Yeah.
If you could see these motion, I hate to call them motion pictures, but the idea of what they're able to photograph of the universe and do it in motion, so you see it in motion.
Uh-huh.
I've been able to see that before. And no kidding, all of these different galaxies that, you know, our wonderful telescopes can give us now and help us to see, they really are streaking across the universe like frisbees.
Wow.
I mean, they're going zoom, 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 zoom. But we don't feel that. We don't see that because of our own gravity, and, you know, we just don't respond to that.
Right.
And when we look out in the night sky or the day sky, we don't see that. But, again, we see such a small part.
Mm-hmm.
If we could see this larger picture like an astronomer sees, we would absolutely be shocked at what's going on.
Wow.
And here's the big one, this sort of like woo-woo-woo thing that you feel like all of a sudden, you know, you're in the Outer Limits.
Uh-huh.
You know, that movie, that show, Outer Limits, you feel like you're suddenly there.
Yeah.
And this is what I want to say. Something is attracting all of these galaxies to speed towards it and influencing them to form patterns. The great attractor is unknown. Nobody knows. I haven't even heard any psychic talk about it.
Wow.
Nobody knows what the great attractor is, but there is one. This is this great mystery.
Wow.
And some of these galaxies are forming patterns of pyramids or a great eye, or they're coming up with all these patterns. And we look at that and you know, if you're anything like me, you can't help but look at this and say, what is causing this?
Uh-huh.
Because it's getting more and more pronounced, and we're seeing it more and more frequently.
Wow.
Now, we all know about the precession of the equinoxes. This is what, you know, causes the axis tilt from the Earth wobble. And I just want to put a little brief aside here. Astrology is based on seasons, not the equinoxes.
Mm.
So all of these scientists that go around saying, oh, well, there's no truth to astrology, they're talking in terms of the equinoxes, and that's not what astrology is based on.
Mm.
It's based on the season. So I just wanted to add that. It's a little brief one here.
Okay.
Our Earth is now reaching the far end of our elliptical orbit, our own galaxy. So we're talking Milky Way galaxy.
Right.
So this is where we get the idea of the great shifting. We're talking just about our Earth. But I wanted everyone to realize that this is happening everywhere on all the planets.
Yeah,
it is not just Earth. The Earth is not the only planet undergoing a global warming. Mars is doing it. Jupiter is doing it. We're not the only planet to be having Earth shifting of one kind or another.
Uh-huh.
For instance, Pluto is now, you know, way out there, little Pluto. They now call it a dwarf planet. We used to call it a planet. Is now displaying all kinds of bright colors. They never did that before. All kinds of bright colors, way, way out there in the woony toolies. And little old Pluto is displaying all of these bright colors. You know, how is that happening?
Yeah.
It's certainly not getting that shine and those reflections from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we have all these mysteries that are happening now. And sometimes I think it's kind of easier to understand this in terms of astrology, or at least in terms of cycles. And the big cycle that it's coming to an end now, that people talk about, you know, the end of the days. Mm. You know, and you get this real shake in your voice, and you get everybody real scared. This is the end of time.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's the ending of the cosmic year.
Okay.
The cosmic year lasts 25,920 years.
Okay.
That's how long it lasts. It's coming to an end now, and then, of course, it rolls into the next cosmic year.
Right.
You know, it's not the end of time. It's the end of the cosmic year.
Right.
A cosmic year, again, lasts 25,920 years.
Okay.
The cosmic month lasts about 2,160 years. That's what we know of as the ages, like
okay.
the age of Pisces, the age of Aquarius, you know, the age of Taurus. Those are cosmic months, and they last about 2,160 years.
Okay.
So I'm just giving that to you to sort of give you an idea of the difference between cosmic year and a cosmic month.
Okay.
Where we are right now, again, is the ending of that cosmic year, and we're getting close to, we're not there yet, but we're getting close to the end of a cosmic month as well. You know, people say, well, you know, we're leaving the age of Pisces, and we're moving into the age of Aquarius or the age of Enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we won't really be in that age, I don't think, till about 2133
okay.
or 3233 with the 33rd passage of Halley's Comet.
Okay.
Well, you know, and some people say, you know, even after that, before we're really in the age of Aquarius, when we're going to start really feeling those Aquarian energies is about 2025, something like that. So it's still, you know, a few years away, and that's when Pluto sort of rolls into the sign of Aquarius. Right now it's in Capricorn. So, again, we're just not there yet.
Okay.
You know, back in the 60s when they were singing about the age of Aquarius, we were starting to feel what was coming,
uh-huh.
but we were way, way off
oh.
as far as it, you know, it's going to happen next year, or it's going to happen next decade. No!
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still a long way off.
Oh.
But where we are in the Milky Way, I hope everybody in the audience can sort of bring to mind, you know, pictures they've seen of the Milky Way, or maybe charts they've seen of the Milky Way. And there's a great bulge in the patterning of the Milky Way, sort of the edge of it, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And in that bulge, entering into that bulge is what they call the dark rift. And there's sort of like this, what would you call it? It's sort of like a jutting into, like maybe a canal, or maybe like a something like a fjord. Anyway, there's this open space that goes in and gets narrower and narrower and narrower, and almost goes to a peak. And that sort of opening into the great bulge is what they call the dark rift.
Okay.
And so we, planet Earth, in our orbit and in our movement in space, have not only entered the dark rift, but we're almost at the very end of it. That's what the Mayan calendar calculates in terms of ending a particular voyage.
Okay.
But you see, once you get to the end or the point of the dark rift, you come back out again.
Right.
So, I mean, it doesn't end the world. It doesn't end life. It doesn't end the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It just ends that particular journey. Now, according to Edgar Cayce, we began to enter the dark rift in 1998.
Oh.
Now, I've not checked that with science, so I don't know how correct that is, but I know he's pretty close.
Mm, okay.
So we can think in terms of, hey, it took us a while to get here, it's also going to take us a while to get out of here. You know?
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, we didn't get here in 10 days.
Right.
Sorry,
right.
Folks. We didn't even get here in 5 years.
Right.
And so it's going to take a while to sort of back out of the place, as it were, or to get on with it.
Yeah.
So that sort of creates word pictures here. Now, sort of undergirding that word picture, I want to talk a little bit more about cycles.
Okay.
And I'd also like to talk a little bit more about these huge ancient calendars. The Mayan calendar is only one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the Mayan astronomer priests were the best that the world has ever produced that we know of.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't anybody else as good. But your Vedic mathematicians were also very, very good.
Okay.
So I'll just touch on the yugas in a little bit.
All right.
But right now, I just want to kind of paint a little picture about cycles. Because cycles are not circular. You know, a lot of people think they are, but they're not. Your natural cycles are, all of them, spiral.
Mm, right.
They're all based on spirals.
Yep, yep.
And there's always a dip before the next thrust. That's where we are now in our cyclic movement.
Okay.
We're in the dip. There's always a dip before the next thrust. So certainly we're on the next level, but we're in the dip of that level. So we haven't thrust upward yet.
Okay.
And consciousness triggers the direction of the spiral, its speed and its effect. So we're talking here about the law of mind action, or the idea that thoughts are things.
Right.
Edgar Cayce used to say we determine where things lead and what results. So I think it was Cayce that said that. If it wasn't him, it was someone like him.
Okay.
But I'll just say it again. We determine where things lead and what results. You know, if you're going to, well, I'll talk a little bit more about, I'm trying to think what I want to say next. I think what I really want to say next is, in talking about these ancient calendars, and again, there are many of them. Some are better than others. Some of them are more complex than others. There are dozens, if not hundreds of them. I think all your major civilizations have their own calendars. Almost all of them wrap around. So their understanding of the calendar, how it's built up, how it works is, let's say we're talking in terms of worlds, first world, second world, third world, fourth world, fifth world, or plane, or, you know, however, whatever type of words they use.
Uh-huh.
They'll go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and they'll go on and on and on that way on ascending and descending cycles of energy.
Okay.
So these ancient calendars, most of them wrap around. They have this wrap around element.
Okay.
The ancient peoples didn't think forward motion like we do.
Uh-huh.
They thought in terms of cycles. Everything was cyclic,
okay,
and everything spiraled. Therefore, you had long and short versions. You had day and night cycles. You had times when life flourished and times when life went dormant.
Uh-huh.
And all of these ancient calendars were based on the importance of catastrophe. They all realized that catastrophe is what primes the evolutionary pump.
Huh.
It's what enables and allows life to transform, to evolve, to get better, or in some cases worse.
Right.
But to move onward and upward, you have to have catastrophes. That was their understanding.
Huh.
And if you really look at some of these calendars, then it just really kind of grabs you. Like, for instance, if you're looking at the yugas, the yugas are based on that 25,920-year cycle. Now, Sri Yukteswar came along and shortened it. He called it a 24,000-year shift.
Okay.
But if you go by the ancient yugas, the idea of the Brahmins, the Vedic culture over in India and that kind of thing, very ancient cultures, they called it the yugas. It took 1,000 yuga cycles to each one to equal one Brahma day. So these are, they recognize huge, giant cycles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really. And they calculated them.
Mm-hmm.
So our current day of Brahma, where we are now in the yuga cycle,
mm-hmm.
began, hold on to your hat.
Okay.
Hold on your hat. Are you settled in your chair?
Yes.
It began 2 billion years ago.
Oh, good Lord.
So you see, they have an understanding of time that's a little different from ours.
Right. Right.
But you know, the really spooky part is, If you read the book, for instance, Forbidden Archaeology, and
okay.
it's by Michael A. Cremo, that's
right.
Forbidden Archaeology. If you read that book, there are human bones. Did you get that? Human bones. Human footprints and human artifacts that we have now that are millions of years old.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Millions of years old.
Yeah.
And most of these are scientists and our academicians call anomalies.
Yeah, right.
And they stuff them in boxes in their basements or in their closets and sell them to any fool they can find to sell them to. Because if they investigated them further,
mm-hmm.
it would throw off accepted timelines and
right.
evolutionary lines.
Right.
So they don't want to do that. So they just kick these out the door.
Right.
And they refuse to look at them. But,
well, eventually,
you know,
it's going to have to be examined by, you know, all of science if we're to get to the truth.
Well, I'm hoping that the new children, once they get old
yeah.
enough, because
yeah.
they're a little scruffy anyway.
Right.
I mean, they are. They're a little bit irreverent.
Yeah, right.
They'll all come to this point, or many of them, I hope, will come to this point where they just stick their feet in the dirt and say, now, enough of this. We want to look at all evidence.
Yes.
We want to investigate all evidence, not just the evidence we prefer.
Right.
Or that passes peer review in papers.
Exactly.
We want to look at all of it.
Exactly.
Because there's too many excellent archaeologists that are losing their jobs and are being made fun of because they are finding evidence, solid, verified evidence that strikes down our preferred histories of timelines.
Well, now, didn't we go through that when the Earth was discovered that it was not flat?
Oh, I love your thinking, Lynn.
I mean, it was inevitable that that moment
yeah,
come.
Yeah, it's similar. It's
yeah,
similar.
And here we are at the next moment. You know, not only is it not flat, it's round, but maybe it's quantum and multidimensional, and there are multiple dimensions. So, I mean, we're right poised at the edge, I think.
Well, you know, in saying that, let me intersect here another little point.
Okay, all right.
There's lots of cycles all ending right now. It's not just the 25,920-year cycle.
Right.
Or the 2,160-year cycle.
Right.
There is a 300,000-year cycle ending now.
Yes.
There's an 11,600-year cycle ending now.
Yes.
All of your major cycles are ending now.
Well, somewhere I read that there's even a 6.4 billion-year cycle that's ending at the same time.
Right, right.
So,
and, you know, changes in the fossil record,
right.
These are all coming to bear now. So this is why everybody's getting kind of skittish.
Yeah.
And they're saying, all this stuff is going on. What do I believe? Well, you might kind of believe it all.
Right.
In the sense that all of these cycles are ending at the same time. What
right.
does it all mean? Obviously, it means there's going to be a lot of changes.
Yeah.
How many? Nobody knows.
Right.
Where it's going to happen next? Nobody knows.
Right.
But remember what we just said a little bit ago.
Uh-huh.
We determine where things lead and what results, because it's consciousness that triggers the direction of the spiral.
Yes.
So don't forget that. We are not helpless victims.
Exactly.
I want to get that out of everybody's head.
Yeah.
You're not helpless victims.
Yes.
You may feel like it, but that doesn't mean that you are.
Exactly.
Now, according to the various histories, we've had 6 wipeouts before. A wipeout is when life as we know it was either devastated, destroyed, wiped out, or nearly wiped out.
Right.
But the interesting thing is, always there are Noahs. Always there are seeds for the next cycle. So it's never a complete wipeout. Always there are Noahs. And I really would recommend to the listening audience that they get a hold of another book.
Okay.
And that's called Voices of the Rocks. And it's by Robert Schock, I think you pronounce his name. It's S-C-H-O-C-H.
Okay.
Actually, it's Robert M. Schock.
Okay.
S-C-H-O-C-H.
Okay.
Again, you get in, you know, we have this notion, it's taught in our schools and our universities and our science labs, that evolution is based on uniformitarianism.
Right.
It's not.
Not.
It's
no.
based on cycles.
Exactly.
And, you know, we've got to get over this linear teaching,
yes.
and come to realize that nature does not work necessarily in a linear pattern.
Yeah.
Nature
exactly.
works in cycles. Now, let's admit something right now about the Mayan calendar. The Mayan calendar is not a calendar as we know calendars to be.
Okay.
The Mayan calendar is actually a device that tracks the development of human consciousness on the earth plane.
Right.
Because
right.
in the Mayan calendar, besides all these dates and stuff, and there aren't really dates as we know dates to be,
right.
Are these 9 waves of how consciousness rises. It rises, in according to the Mayan calendar, in 9 waves. So we've got the idea of a calendar and dates. We've got the idea of waves of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
We've got all these different ideas that are all showing through this one particular device.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
also get a sense of that in the yugas. We also get a sense of that in some of the other calendars. But I don't think any of them are quite as complex or as meaningful, at least to me, as the Mayan calendar and the yugas. Those are just fabulous. If you want to study things, you might study those. But bear in mind, again, don't fall into this trap that the Mayan calendar is a calendar.
Right, right.
It's really not. You can use it for one.
Right.
But it's really not a calendar.
Right.
It's a device.
Yep.
And, you know, that just changes everything.
Yep. Yep.
Now, have I mentioned to you already that the Mayan calendar, that they found the rest of the Mayan calendar?
You did not mention that in this show.
Well, let me do it right now because I think it's extremely important.
Okay.
I don't want to blow everybody's cookies, but this
well,
probably
that's all right.
Will. This probably will anyway.
Good.
They have found the rest of the Mayan calendar.
Okay.
The official announcement came out in May of this year.
Huh.
They found a room in ruins in Guatemala that they somehow missed before or didn't find before or somehow it was hidden before or whatever.
Right.
But they found it.
Yeah.
And the walls are filled with calculations.
Ah.
It's the rest of the calendar. It also has drawings.
Ah.
But the real important thing are the calculations. And there's a particular date that seems to be emphasized. And
okay.
Why, nobody knows.
Okay.
And it's a date that's 8,000 years from now.
Whoa.
Into the future.
Wow.
So what's going to happen 8,000 years from now that they focused on, there's nothing written to even hint at what that might be. But
wow.
I want to give you a quote from one of these archaeologists that is interpreting all of these newfound dates.
All right.
I mean, you know, they've got walls and walls of these things.
Jeez.
And his name is David Stewart. He's an archaeologist with the University of Texas. And this is a quote. The Mayan calendar is going to keep going for billions, trillions, octillions of years
wow.
into the future. Numbers we can't even wrap our heads around.
Wow.
That's how advanced these people were.
Wow.
And that's how big our universe is. And that's their concept of life on this planet.
My goodness.
So this idea that the world is going to end December 21st, 2012, is absolutely utter nonsense.
Thank you.
So I hope everybody heard that. And I hope they remember it. It's all over the internet, by the way. So if you want to get the latest on this dig, that information is out there.
Okay.
And they can, you know, easily get it. That the only thing that ends on December 21, 2012, is the sunstone. You know, the Aztec sunstone a lot of the calendar was recorded on. That's
okay.
The only thing that ends. It's the sunstone.
Ah.
The calendar itself does not end then.
And then that ties into your work on consciousness being, it is not something that ends. It expands and contracts. And it also ties into your work on the near-death experience, which indicates that before a major shift into higher dimensions or into the other side or the void or the other realm, there's a major pressure or shock which precedes the near-death experience.
Well, there's always something to cause or uplift a
right.
change in consciousness. So look at what's happening right now in the Earth plane. Is consciousness changing? Well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hello.
Right.
There's so many people now talking about we're birthing into a new age. The Enlightenment has come, you know,
right.
and positive ways of looking at what's happening.
Right.
We can go back in history for every Renaissance, and there was certainly more than one. So there, we're not just talking about the European Renaissance. There's
right.
been renaissances all over the planet.
Right.
Before each one, there was a wave of people who went through a consciousness change, either by near-death experiences, mountaintop experiences, spiritual experiences, God only knows what kind, but people began to change, and that change grew and grew and grew until it finally burst out into this blooming of a renaissance and music and art and creativity and innovation and new discoveries. And, you know, each one of these was heralded by and fueled by people who had changed their consciousness. And it, and if you take a good look at their characteristics, it matches this pattern of the new kids coming in, what some people call indigo, which I think is a bunch of nonsense, but that's just my opinion. Things like indigo or crystal or starseed or psychic or any of that. If you toss all those labels, and I think you should, because the labels create exclusive clubs of specialness, and that's what I call nonsense. So take all those labels, toss them, and then take the characteristics that those labels were supposed to describe. Take all those characteristics, put them together in one bunch, and you've got the new kids. And that pattern of new kids has been around for a long time. It's not new. What's new is how many now have that pattern. So we're getting a huge, massive breakout globally of people that fit this pattern. It's really the pattern of, you know, if you're going to get into root races and genetics and all that stuff, it's really that pattern, and that's what I talk about at great length in my book that's coming out in December. And by the way, you can pre-order it now. The name of the book is Children of the Fifth World. And I talk about this pattern. I talk about root races. I talk about the new kids, evolution, genetics, what's happening in the world today, timelines, the great shifting, and all that stuff. And I give you dates. So a lot of that is in this book, and I know every school teacher on this planet is going to want that book. Most of your parents are going to want to, are going to want this book, and most of your employers are going to want this book because they want to know who and what they're hiring because it doesn't match new hires they've had in the past. It's a different kind of person out there. So you definitely want to get Children of the Fifth World. And by the way, that's not a near-death book. My near-death books ended at number 10. And all of my books in the future will be dealing with different subjects. And this is the one about genetics, the new kids, evolution, and, you know, the human species.
And I just have to say that your last book, which is called Near-Death Experiences, the rest of the story was absolutely riveting and mind-blowing in its scope and the information that it was consciousness-raising. It really was a consciousness-shifting book. So that's one I highly recommend. And you know that I will be getting Children of the Fifth World as soon as it's out. And the listeners should
well,
get
order
it, too.
Now.
I'm going to order it tonight after I get off the phone.
Children of the Fifth World. That's the name. It comes out to Bear and Company.
Oh, wonderful.
Which is an imprint of Inner Traditions.
Yes, I love That's my favorite company on the planet.
Oh, really?
yes, absolutely.
Yeah, well, this one is going to shock and surprise everybody. There's nobody that it's not going to shock and surprise.
Oh, good.
If you take a look at what's really happening, it's not quite what you think. So, but then this whole thing that we're living in now is not quite what we think. You know, if you just look at the Mayan calendar itself, it's not really a calendar as we know calendars. And just sort of hang with that thought that it's a device to map or track the advancement of consciousness on the earth plane. If you hold with that thought, then you begin to realize, wait a minute here, wait a minute here. If it's a device to track the advancement of consciousness, what's going on here? Why? And it seems to point to the fact that there must be a great plan. That there must be another force at work.
And that brings us back to the great attractor that you were talking about
at
the beginning of the
show.
So
what is really going on? You know, suddenly we're back now with Outer Limits, and, you know, we get to do that woo-woo-woo-woo-woo stuff.
Right.
And create all these funny tones. So everybody wakes up. They're not asleep here on a Saturday night. They're wide awake, and they're listening.
Yes.
But, you know, if we kind of play games with this, and we certainly can, and they're really kind of not games, but kind of sort of are, then we begin to realize that we really are primed worldwide for all kinds of things to happen. And I want to sort of underscore that with this catastrophe cycle, if you want to call it that, of about every 11,600 years or 500 years right in there.
Right.
And that's the cycle of major catastrophes on the Earth plane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All the indication from our ancient writings are that something like Atlantis sunk, or somehow there was this huge, huge, giant flood.
Right.
Okay, that wiped out a lot of people, places, animals, stuff. Just wiped out a lot of stuff. In wiping out a lot of stuff, among the things that sort of disappeared about 11,500 years ago, was Göbekli Tepe. Now, I'm not sure that I'm pronouncing that right. It's G-O-B-E-K-L-I. I call that Göbekli. And Tepe, T-E-P-E. So I may be pronouncing that wrong.
All right.
And if I am, I apologize. But I'm still calling it Göbekli Tepe.
Okay.
Because I don't know any different.
Right. Okay.
Those are ruins that were found in the, where is it, the south, I think it's the southeastern corner of Turkey. Might be the southwestern, but I think it's the southeastern corner of Turkey, where they found these ruins. Now, science tells us that there is no record or remnants or ruins of an advanced civilization before the breakout.
Yeah.
There's no evidence of civilization before then, much less an advanced civilization. So Göbekli Tepe, what is it, about 7,000 years older than Stonehenge? Something like that. It's old.
Okay.
Really old. It is proof that an advanced civilization existed before 11,500 years ago.
Okay.
Notice I said advanced.
Right.
Notice I said proof.
Right.
Notice that means we have scientists and archaeologists there digging and dating.
Okay.
Okay. We have a civilization that had advanced husbandry, had textiles, had pottery and dishes and dishware, motifs, had gardening and farming, had everything a modern civilization city would have before anything like this could have occurred on the Earth plane according to modern day science. Göbekli Tepe is confounding and confusing everybody.
Oh.
How did this happen?
Right.
And in their temples, they had unusual temples. They were circles. And the circle, and they were sort of a wall of, each circle was walled off in the sense that there were walls around it, but the walls only went so high. They didn't go that high, like we would consider a real wall, maybe knee high or so. And they had these posts at certain places all around the circle, and at each of these posts were fine, detailed carvings of animals we've never seen.
Oh.
And there are dozens of these things. We don't even know how many, because we're still digging them out.
Oh, right.
And one of the things the scientists are noticing is that this whole city, and it's a large city, was buried in fine sand in such a way that it's almost as if the inhabitants buried it themselves for the purpose of preserving the city.
How interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes. Wow.
So that raises all kinds of more questions. You know,
indeed,
the stuff we're talking about now, Lance, is not based on anybody's prediction or psychic wonderment.
Right.
And I'm not putting psychics down. Please don't hear that.
Right.
But know that none of this is based on anything we could even construe as New Agey.
Right. Right.
This is all hard stuff.
Well, it's very old agey.
I mean, it's all the real stuff.
Yes, yes.
It's the way the world is, and the world is not what we thought it was.
Well,
you know, it. And if you just stop and think, okay, cycles are that this whole idea of evolution is based on cycles, not uniformitarianism. I probably pronounced that word wrong.
Hmm.
It's based on cycles. And cycles honor and recognize catastrophe as part of the primal pump. Each world as
right,
they know it, each reality as they define it, ends in a catastrophe.
Huh.
All of them do, that we have record of. So, hey, that means all of a sudden here we are, oops, yoo-hoo, we're in a spot where all of this stuff is converging.
Right.
So does that mean there's going to be catastrophes? Well, there could be. It doesn't mean they're going to be. Because remember, consciousness has a lot to do with what happens.
Yes.
Consciousness directs the motion and speed and direction of occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
So if we all think that something's going to happen in a certain place at a certain time, something probably will.
Right.
If there's enough of us that think that. So we're talking about global consciousness here.
Yes.
But even considering that, I think it would be remiss not to at least recognize that we're in a very precarious place. We're in a tipping point. We've got 2,000 scientists in 100 countries that are saying we have passed the global tipping point of global warming.
Okay.
We've already passed it. We've got weather wars all over, you know, people disagreeing and weather going cuckoo nuts.
Right.
We've got the HAARP facility in Alaska that's H AARP.
Yes.
This huge facility that's it's near Gakona, Alaska. It consists of antennas that stand 65 feet high and are spaced 80 feet apart in 8 columns in 6 rows. And so what are all these columns and the wires that connect them? What are they for? Well, they affect the electromagnetism of good old planet Earth.
That's right.
You know, they affect all kinds of things, including weather and people's brains. And, you know, we're all subject to electromagnetism.
Yes.
So people are saying, well, our government is saying HAARP is up there to protect us from weather extremes and to alter the magnetics. Other people claim that there's a dark side to the HAARP facility, and, you know, we get into these global conspiracies if we, you know, if we
well,
dip into that.
Well, if we had time, we would, but we're almost out of time, so.
Oh, we can't get into this, you know.
We'll have to pick the, we'll be having to pick up most of this in the beginning of the next show, so we have our audience right here in hand already.
Oh, well, they're all going to be sitting on this edge to know what could happen.
Yes, myself included.
I'll hold you all there.
Good.
And I'll see you next week then.
Well, wonderful. And before
oh,
we
and
go...
wait. And don't forget to get on my website, pmhatwater.com, and sign up for my free monthly newsletter. You can only do it on my website. And I reserve the right to change subjects and, you know, and anything I want to do on the free monthly newsletter. One just went out a couple of days ago. There's an archive, so you can read the past ones. Get on that monthly newsletter and keep abreast.
Yes, absolutely, and I love your newsletter, and it's always brings all this information tied together, which helps me to understand a little bit better where we're at in the cosmic scheme of things. So,
well, that's how I see my job, as a synergist,
yep.
That brings things together.
Yep, yep. Well, you're one of my favorite, if not the favorite.
So. You're sweet.
So thank you for doing this first show with us, PMH, and we'll pick this up again next week.
You betcha.
All right. Thanks a million, and good night.
See you
everybody.
Later. Bye, everybody.